How many of you use Google? I mean, isn't Google a noun, a search engine? But then I say, hey, can you Google such and such? Now I've just turned the noun into a what? To a verb. So therefore, it's important to look at how the verb coming from the same root, episteme, is used throughout the New Testament. And there are 15 uses of episteme as a verb in the Greek New Testament. Only three times of 15 does it mean something spiritual. The rest of the times, the verb means something physical. So let me give you those meanings real fast. Notice Luke 8, verse 13. Jesus said, they believe for a while and in time of temptation fall away. That's a episteme used in a spiritual doctrinal departure sense. Notice 1 Timothy 4, verse 1. But the Spirit expressly says that in the latter times some will fall away from the faith. That's a episteme used in the doctrinal or spiritual sense. Hebrews 3, verse 12 says, take care, brethren, that there not be found in any one of you an evil and unbelieving heart that falls away from the living God. That's episteme used in a doctrinal or spiritual sense. Three instances. But of the remaining of the 15, 12 roughly, 75 to 80%, do not mean something spiritual. They mean something physical in terms of a departure. For example, notice Luke chapter 2, and verse 37. It says, then as the widow to the age of 84, she never left the temple. That's a episteme, and it's talking about how she physically, not spiritually, physically never left the temple. Luke 4, verse 13, when the devil had finished every temptation, he left him for a more opportune time. That's Satan, a episteme, physically leaving Christ. Luke 13, verse 27, he said, I tell you, I do not know where you are from. Depart from me, all you evildoers. Physically depart from me, Jesus says, in the final judgment. Luke 13, verse 27. How about the book of Acts, chapter 5, verse 38? After this man, Judas of Galilee, rose up in the days of the census, and drew away some people after him, and he too perished, and all those who followed him were scattered. So in the present case, I say to you, this is Galileo speaking to the disciples, stay away from these men or these apostles. There's a episteme twice. Speaking not of a spiritual departure, but a physical departure. In other words, physically remove yourself from them, physically leave them alone. How about Acts 12, verse 10? Peter was in jail, and it says, immediately the angel departed from him. The angel, in other words, physically left Peter. You see that? How about Acts 13, verse 13? This is when John Mark bailed out on the first missionary journey. It says, now Paul and his companions put out to sea from Paphos to Perga in Pamphylia, but John left them and returned to Jerusalem. When John Mark left, that wasn't necessarily just a spiritual departure. That was a physical departure. Acts 19 and verse 9, it says, but when some were becoming hardened and disobedient, speaking evil of the way before the people, he withdrew from them. That's again speaking of a physical removal. Just a couple more. Acts 22, verse 29, therefore those who are about to examine him immediately let go of him. They physically remove themselves from the Apostle Paul. And then you remember Paul's thorn in the flesh? 2 Corinthians 12, verse 8. Concerning this, I implored the Lord 3 times that it might leave me. That's epistemy. He says, I want this thorn in the flesh physically away from me. You say, well, what's your point? My point is, when you track the verb coming from the same root, 75 to 80% of the time, it's not talking about a spiritual or doctrinal departure. It's talking about a physical removal. So both the noun apostasia and the verb coming from the same root, epistemi, can easily mean something, a physical removal. You follow with me so far? So if both the noun and the verb can mean either something doctrinal or something spiritual, then how do I know in any given passage what meaning to supply? Well, what are the 3 rules of real estate? Location, location, location. What are the 3 rules of Bible study? Context, context, context. Context covers a multitude of interpretive sins. In other words, if you know the context, you know what meaning to supply. Take the word apple, for example. How many meanings can you generate from the word apple? Well, it could be a piece of fruit. It could be a computer. It could be the pupil of one's eye, the apple of one's eye. I may have made a trip to New York City recently, the Big Apple. So I see the word apple in a text or a letter or a message. How do I know what meaning to supply? What tells me? The context. If it's talking about a computer, I don't supply the fruit meaning, because words have meanings based on their context. You follow me? So here's something that I ran into recently from an article by George Gunn. Notice the word run. How many meanings it has. I ran out of ingredients for the salad, so I started to make a quick run down to the store. While at the store, I left the car engine running while I made my purchase, thinking I would be right out again. However, I was in the store, I ran into my good friend Edward, who was running for county supervisor. This resulted in me having to endure a somewhat long-winded rundown on his campaign as he was running. Now, if Edward were a woman, we could say she had a run in her stockings, and add to this, if he had diarrhea, we could say he had a case of the runs, but we won't go there. Finally, fearing that my car would run out of gas, I ran with great haste out to the parking lot and returned home with the car running only on fumes. You see how the word run radically changes its meaning in just a short paragraph? And the only way you would know what meaning to supply for each word, use of the word, is what? The immediate context. So the issue then becomes, well, if the noun and the verb can both mean something physical or something doctrinal, how do I figure out what Paul is talking about in verse 3? I've got to look at the what? The context. So this takes me to number 6. Number 6, the extended context favors the physical departure view. What do I mean by the extended context? I mean the books of 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians taken together. Because one of the things to understand about the 2 Thessalonian books is they were both written within 6 months to a year of each other, and written to the same flock of baby Christians that Paul was separated from. And so when you look at the extended context of 1 Thessalonians, you know what you discover? What's on Paul's mind? The second coming. Because you'll go through 1 Thessalonians, and what you're going to discover is it's got 5 chapters in it, and every chapter ends with a reference to the return of Christ. Did you know that? In fact, at the end of chapter 4, that's where you get your greatest treatment on the rapture. In 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 13 through 18. What's on Paul's mind in these two letters is the return of Christ. So if that's true, why is it such a big deal for me to supply in 2 Thessalonians 2 verse 3 into that noun apostasia a physical departure. I mean, that's no crime at all, because that's the subject that Paul is broadly dealing with in the two Thessalonian letters.